Whale. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. Well, today our special guest is going to be Ralph Epperson, and we're going to be talking about those secret organizations that work behind the scenes that have manipulated America from war to war. But before we do, I wanted to share with you one of my favorite poems. It was written by an orthopedic surgeon. And as you know, I was an orthopedic surgeon for many years, and there's a camaraderie among those of us who had the privilege of taking broken bodies and putting them back together and seeing them walk and run and play again and restoring them to function. Couldn't help them all, but we could help an awful lot of them, and it was a wonderful privilege to be an orthopedist. But 11 years before I was born, Lieutenant Colonel John McCrae, who was a Canadian orthopedic surgeon, penned these words from Europe. In Flanders fields the poppies blow, between the crosses row on row, that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing fly, scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw, the torch be yours to throw it high. If we break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders fields. And of course that poem, for many years, was read in churches, it was read in schools, and grown men wept, thinking of the futility of World War I. We lost 125,000 men, another 230,000 wounded in that war. We prolonged the war for a year and a half while millions more died in a senseless war that America never should have been in. In fact, it never should have been fought. If you read the Kaiser's memoirs, he'll tell you he had learned only after the war there was a secret Masonic plot that had brought it all about, and we cover all of that in my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. There was an answer to the Flanders Field. There was a number of them. One of my favorites was America's answer. Rest ye in peace, ye Flanders dead. The fight that ye so bravely led, we've taken up and we will keep. True faith with you who lie asleep, with each a cross to mark his bed in Flanders fields. Fear not that you have died for naught, the torch ye threw to us we caught. 10 million hands will hold it high, and freedom's light shall never dime. We've learned the lesson that ye taught in Flanders fields. But the question is, have we really learned any lesson at all? Now we find ourselves involved in a war in the Middle East. The First World War was fought to make the world safe for democracy. The First World War was fought to make the world safe for democracy, the war to end all wars. And why are we fighting over in Iraq today? Why, we want to bring democracy to that part of the world. But I thought we went to war to get the wicked Osama bin Laden who'd attacked the United States. Oh, we forgot that. We had to go on to more important wars, and then the coming war, I fear, with Iran. Everything points to that. That's what it's really all about. It's all about an excuse to attack Iran, to get our people into positions there, permanently station our troops in the Middle East. The American people are never told the truth, nor are the young men we send overseas to fight. You need to get involved. If we're not involved, then those others have died in vain. If you are involved and we can save America, we can save Western civilization. And that really is up to you. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, our guest this evening, Ralph Epperson. Ralph, how are you tonight on this Memorial Day?
Doing fine, Dr. Stan. How about yourself?
Well, I'm doing fine, thinking about those courageous men who've gone overseas to fight for freedom while we've been losing our freedom here at home. And we've lost more freedom in this last 4 years than at any time in our nation's history. And the American people don't understand while American boys are sent overseas to fight for freedom, while we're losing our freedom here in the United States. And everything is being put in place for a dictatorship, and nobody wants to say it.
Well, that's true, unfortunately. And what we do, you and I both, Dr. Stan, I believe, is try to expose those truths to the American people and hopefully get them to listen. That's what this is all about.
How long have you been involved in the battle, Ralph?
Well, if you want to start with my reading, it was 40-some years ago. I started reading in 1962, but I started going public in 1973, and that's when I started. And then I actually started my own talk show in Portland, Oregon in 73. I taught part-time at a community college, and then I published my first book in 1985. And that's when I really started, because that's when I created Publius Press to sell my materials, and I've been selling them ever since.
Well, of course, I started in the same year, 62, and so we've been at it, both of us, about 45 years. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't seem that anybody really cares about freedom anymore. They want to follow along the slogans, oh, we just got to keep fighting. If we were to pull our boys out, think of all the killing that'd be over there. If we were to pull our boys out, think of all the chaos. You know, we got to, all those boys who fought and died, if we pull out, they'll have died in vain. But if we really care about our boys, we've got to get them out of harm's way. And they're not going to be in harm's way as long as we're there, because the majority of people are not over there, not Al-Qaeda. They're Sunni, you know, they're Sunnis who feel we're occupying the land and stealing their oil and killing their people. And as long as we're there, they're going to be fighting. There's only probably less than 2,000 Al-Qaeda actually over there. The rest of them are Sunnis, and then some of the Shias. They all want us to leave, except for the Kurds, and they've got things pretty good up there in Kurdistan. And we've destroyed the Christians. Most of the Christians have fled the country because we've established an Islamic state, Islamic socialist state, and there's no place in the Islamic state for Christians. The 10% of the Christians have been driven out of the country, and the American people have no idea. They just live by sound bites, and it's up to people like you and I are going to be criticized for saying, we never should have gone in, and now we've made a mistake, let's get out. But I think that we need to let people know why we were in there, and that is the real thing, and we'll be right back with Ralph. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I don't think anybody can understand why we're in the Middle East today. I mean, we're told over and over there we're fighting for oil, and yeah, probably some people are interested in getting the oil, and others say, oh, we're fighting for Israel, we're controlled by Israel, but if, as I fear, we go into a massive war there, the state of Israel may well be destroyed, or millions of Jews may be killed. And people will tell you we're over there for the profits for the munitions manufacturers, but, I mean, the munitions manufacturers don't create wars, they just profit from them. Tell us we're over there as a diversion to keep our attention off what's going on here at home, and that's probably partly true. But I really think we're over there as part of a globalist agenda to bring about a world government, and that's what it's really all about. This will be the third try. The First World War was the first try. The Second World War was the second try. And this coming major world war that will bring chaos not only to the Middle East but to America will be, of course, what will bring about the world government, unless, of course, the American people intervene, unless God intervenes and prevents it from happening. What do you think, Ralph?
Well, yeah, I agree with you. I'm not sure I know exactly what this that war is all about either. I remember saying, as soon as I heard that they were going in there to stop the weapons of mass destruction, I said they'll never find them. And sure enough, now what, 5-6 years later, they've never found them. Now I understand there's an Iranian general claiming that all of the weapons of mass destruction were taken to Syria. I don't know if that's true.
I know that is true. I have that from a number of very reliable sources. And I think they have them over Syria, ready to use them on the Iranians and put on to weapons that may very well be used against you and I. But after all, what goes around comes around, because we gave Saddam Hussein the chemicals to build those chemical weapons with, the biological to build the biological weapons with, American tax money at work.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned that you thought there are people claiming that this is all about the oil, and that's simply not true. I don't know if ever, in the unseen hand, I covered the fact that the oil in this nation, in this world, was owned by what they call the Eight Sisters, and the Eight Sisters owned the Iranian oil. It's called, there's a company over there called the Anglo-Iranian Oil Company that owns Iranian oil, and they split the profits 50% with the Iranian government. So we already own the oil, and OPEC was formed by the Seven Sisters. And so there are 13 nations in OPEC by coincidence, number 13 significant to the Masons, and et cetera. And the oil is owned by already owned by American companies. So they're not over there for oil. That's not the reason. It's got nothing to do with it. They already own the oil. There's some claim that they were going to build a pipeline from Afghanistan into, Russia or something.
No, it was going to be running from the Caspian Basin down through Afghanistan and then through Pakistan into the Indian Ocean. And they're still planning to do that. They just haven't got around to it because they haven't been able to create enough stability in Afghanistan to justify putting the pipeline in.
Well, one of the questions I remember asking, and I still ask, is up until Yasser Arafat died, apparently of a natural death, all four of the major Arabian terrorists were still alive, and I don't understand that. Saddam Hussein, Gaddafi, Osama bin Laden, and Yasser Arafat. And Yasser Arafat's interesting. This man was a known terrorist. He was acknowledged as such. I've got four pictures of him being greeted by three people are greeting him were Americans, like Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton, and then the third one was Jesse Jackson. Jesse's giving him a hug. And I said in my video that I put out on Da Vinci Code book that, isn't it interesting that all of these Americans never reported him to the FBI, the CIA, and said Yasser Arafat's a terrorist, we want him arrested. That was never done. There was an article in my local newspaper that said that the headline read, this was about, 2002 or something like that. It said, quote, the headline read, Sharon, which I gather is Ariel Sharon, the Prime Minister of Israel, said, quote, we should have killed Arafat 20 years ago. So that means 1982 to the year 2002. So they apparently didn't know where he was. Well, they should have called Bill Clinton because Bill Clinton's been pictured having a dinner with him in the White House. They could have called Jesse Jackson because Jesse knew where he was. He was giving a big bear hug. And there's a picture of Hillary extending her right hand so that Arafat could kiss it. He's bending over, like it's almost like he's not kneeling, but bending, bowing to Hillary. So these three Americans never reported him as a terrorist. I don't understand that. Why were they allowing all of these men to keep living? The 9/11 occurred in the year 2001. Is that correct?
That's right.
In January of 2002, I gave a speech here in Tucson in which I stated, after George Bush had said, I promise you we'll find Saddam Hussein, Sullivan
Bin Laden, right.
I said, they'll never find him. Now it's, 5-6 years later, they've never found him. But George Bush promised us they'd get him. Well, they didn't get him.
Well, he just didn't tell us when they were going to find him.
Oh, to be fair to the man.
It's right. Like Bill Clinton promised we'd get our troops out of Bosnia by November. He just didn't say which November. And of course, the question you're raising, Ralph, it should be so obvious to the American people that all of these terrorists were financed and controlled by the United States. We were funding Yasser Arafat. The Israeli government was helping him set up secret bank accounts all over Europe. And time and time again, we were funding him. In fact, even recently, where anybody can go up on the internet and Google in Fatah and U.S. arms, you'll find out we're pouring all sorts of weapons into Fatah, the Palestinian organization. Why are we giving all these guns and weapons to Fatah that's eventually going to use them against the Israelis? Oh, well, we want to get Fatah fighting Hamas. Well, who's funding Hamas? Why, they're getting the money from Egypt. Who's funding Egypt? We are.
United States.
And so, you know, and then, of course, you talk about Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein, I have books written 15 years ago, going into the fact that Saddam Hussein had started working for the CIA back in 1959. We have, of course, the books, you know, that show that he was funded all during the 1980s by our government. We gave him billions of dollars. Anybody that liked the article out of the Washington Post, when an ally becomes an enemy, would be glad to send it. Washington Post points out the billions of dollars, and of course the material to build the chemical and biological weapons we gave to Saddam Hussein. We can't let the American people think clearly about what's going on. In fact, almost every single terrorist in the world, including Russia, which is a terrorist nation, has been funding terrorism, is still funded with our tax money. And I hope our listeners will read my February and March and April newsletters, because, of course, they go into the background. And we'll document this for anybody, actually, March, April, and May newsletters. The March is simply Professor Sutton's testimony before the Republican Platform Committee in 1972, pointing out that in the middle of the Vietnam War, when, of course, the Viet Cong was killing American soldiers in the rice paddies and villages of South Vietnam, we were funding the Russians, who were funding the North Vietnamese, who were funding the Viet Cong, who were killing our boys. And nothing has changed. Today we're funding the Pakistan government that's funding Pakistani intelligence, that's funding the Taliban that's killing our boys in the poppy fields and villages of Afghanistan. It's like deja vu all over again, but we can't let the American people think or question what's going on.
That's correct. I put out a three-hour video on Vietnam to show that we hired and trained and armed Ho Chi Minh at the end of World War II, and American generals went over there to train him and his guerrilla army, and in fact they went on the shortwave radio in Vietnam to announce that there was a revolution coming and that the United States government was supporting Ho Chi Minh. So we did. We kept him alive with aid and trade through Russia, you pointed out.
In fact, anybody would like to hear, we have a wonderful interview, a two-hour interview with Fletcher Prouty, Colonel Fletcher Prouty, who was the CIA liaison to the CIA. And after he retired, he did a two-hour interview with me where he told how exactly what you're saying. At the end of the Second World War, massive arms supplies on Okinawa that had been put there for the invasion of Japan, and half of that was sent to Korea because we knew the Korean War was coming just a few years later. And then, of course, the other half was sent to Ho Chi Minh so we would build him up as a revolutionary so we could fight him, you know, in, of course, beginning of the 1960s. But we can't let the American people know that we build the best enemies that money could buy, just as today, why, of course, Russia is being financed by the United States. And all this drilling for oil and natural gas and building the pipelines in Russia, which is such a primitive nation that if you go 1 hour out of Moscow or 1 hour of St. Petersburg, you'll find you're back in 19th century Russia. All of this, of course, development of Russia has been financed by our tax money. And we have a speech by the head of the Export-Import Bank talking about how they're financing the American corporations that have drilled all those oil and gas wells for Russia and, of course, built the pipelines for Russia, and through the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, and the Asian Development Bank, and American corporations and American banks, and, of course, the help of the European banks, why we've created the best enemy money could buy. And then, of course, Russia, in turn, is building the weapons that they're giving to Iran and to Syria that will be used against American boys in the coming war in the Middle East. Doesn't make sense? Well, maybe it does make sense. Maybe nothing is as it appears to be. Maybe there really are secret societies, and that's what Ralph has spent so many years in researching and studying. And that's why we value his opinions, and we're going to be back in just a minute talking about Masonry. Is simply one of the secret societies, but it is one of the most important ones. It has over 2 million members right here in the United States, millions of members throughout the world, who have pledged their fidelity to the great architect of the universe, who is not the God that we worship. We'll be back in just a moment with Ralph. Go right ahead there.
Well, you know, I'd like to, if I may, get back to this oil subject, if you wouldn't mind, Dr.
No,
because
right
our
ahead.
Gas prices, I understand yours in California is a little bit ahead of ours.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927, or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Tieri. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
By 1949, the cartel had as members the seven greatest oil companies of the world, and he calls them, and others call them the Seven Sisters. Here they are: Anglo-Iranian, Royal Dutch Shell, Esso, which is Standard Oil of England, Calso, California Standard Oil, Saucony Vacuum, which is a Standard Oil company, Gulf, and Texaco. Excluding the United States domestic market, the Soviet Union and Mexico, it controlled 90% of the world's reserves of oil, 88% of the world's production, 77% of the world's refining capacity, and 70% of the world's tonnage in ocean tankers. And then they charge, they were buying back in 1959 the oil for 30 cents a barrel and selling it for $2.16, which was a 600 plus percent profit. That is called an exorbitant profit, but George Bush, for some reason, is not looking into that. I don't understand why. It couldn't be that his father and his family are involved in the oil business, could it? Could that very well be the reason?
Well, I think the people who control George Bush and put him in office have already come from the major oil companies. But behind all of this, of course, there are powerful spiritual forces, and I think this is what people miss. I mean, it's simply not, you know, that they're making a profit. There are powerful forces that are giving them these profits, and I believe that this is all being done, certainly by people of great power and great wealth who work in concert and making profit out of oil is part of this, but their ultimate goal, of course, is this one world government. If you give yourself over to the dark side and pursue their goal, which is, of course, a new world order, a new world religion, a new world leader, you'll be very well rewarded. You'll make handsome profits, you'll have great wealth and power, at least in this world, but in the next world you're going to be in real trouble.
This will be one more paragraph from The Western Crisis by James B. Warburg on page, 54. From 1933 to 1955, the largest of the Arabian companies operating in the Middle East, the Arabian American Oil Company, paid no income tax whatever to the American government. In 1956, it paid $282,000 on profits estimated at $200 million. That's probably about a 1% tax, isn't it? Is that
well,
what
it
is?
It's a lot less than that. Well.
Yeah. In other words, these oil companies already own the Arabian oil countries, and they split the profits with these oil companies, with these monarchs over there, 50-50. So Saddam Hussein and the president of Iraq, they're already partners of the oil companies, and yet we're going to go to war and not go to war. And during the Gulf War, I remember hearing a general report, American general report. It was really a mistake that we didn't kill Saddam Hussein back in 91 or 92 when it was. Was it a mistake? No, I don't think so. He was a partner. And as you pointed out to start our discussion tonight, Dr. Stan, we financed Saddam Hussein. We built his army for him. All this, and yet Americans are dying. And I don't understand that. Why? Why do we tolerate this in our great country? People like me and you are trying to warn the American people about this. This is why we're paying $3.50 here in Arizona, $3 a gallon for our gasoline, and they're making exorbitant profits, 700 to 1,000% profit.
Well, I think, Ralph, what we have to understand is things are going to have to get a lot worse before people begin looking at what's going on, before they become concerned. So really the best thing that can happen is for things to get worse. At that point, people are going to begin saying, what's really going on? And at that point, maybe they're going to begin to listen, begin to understand, do we really know what's going on? How do we know that Saddam Hussein was executed? Why, supposedly somebody had a telephone there with a little video camera on it. You mean nobody there when they were executing Saddam Hussein saw this guy with his cell phone there taking pictures of it? I mean, what do we really know? How much of our reality is created by simply as an illusion?
Well, so, I was talking to a woman who is a trained forensic anthropologist. She compares pictures on the computer, and she said she found 9 pictures of Saddam Hussein, and she ran those against this man who was allegedly hung by the Iraqi government, and it's not the same man.
Well, we've heard this from many, many sources. We would simply ask our listeners, if you believe what you're being told, you get onto the computer tonight, you Google in FBI, 10 most wanted, you'll get the picture of Osama bin Laden, see what he's wanted for. Is he wanted for the attack on the World Trade Center? Of course not. The FBI doesn't think he was involved, at least according to their 10 most wanted poster. Check it out. Find out if it really could be true. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ralph Epperson. And remember that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And our guest this evening is Ralph Epperson. We're talking about, well, we're talking about secret societies. Among, of course, the most important, or one of the most important here in the United States is the Masonic conspiracy, and it is a conspiracy. The Masons worship a different god. And I think this is so crucial to any discussion of what's going on today. You have to understand that there are people who believe that there are other gods, equal, and of course many people believe the god of Masonry is superior to the god of the Bible. If you read Morals and Dogma, written by Albert Pike, which is really the Bible of Masonry, and you read it very carefully, you'll come to realize that what they're really telling you is there are two gods. This is, of course, from the basic Gnostic belief. There is the good God, and then there's the bad God, and the good God is Lucifer. The bad God is, that's the God that we worship. Well, wait a minute now. We've got Masons at every level of our government, in our court systems, in the executive branch of government. We've got Masons working in our great industries and education, and they've sworn allegiance to another God. How would you respond to that, Ralph?
Well, I agree with you 100%, Dr. Stan. I've written a book called Masonry Conspiracy Against Christianity, documenting the evidence that they do indeed worship Lucifer and their quote, true purpose, end quote, written by the man who wrote their rituals, Albert Pike, is the destruction of Christianity. And they learned that at the 30th degree. I want to go back, if I may, to your reading of a poem at the very beginning about, maybe that was about World War One. Is that correct?
That was World War One in Flanders Fields, right.
I don't know where Flanders is. That's in France someplace?
Yes, it was, huh?
I have a picture, a color picture, I don't know where I found it, in some magazine, I think it was, of an overhead shot, like from a helicopter, of a cemetery in France with 14,000 Americans buried there. You can see the white crosses. The picture's probably 4x6 or 5x7. So, well, not real big, but big enough to see. I noticed that the cemetery has been divided into 8 sections by robes, meaning each section there's a quarter, 1/8 of all of the 14,000 crosses, I guess. And if you, they've been divided by trees. So there's each section has trees on all 4 sides. So if you take 8 times 4, you get 32. There's 32...
Hold that thought.
Okay.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Ralph was simply commenting on the poem we began with, In Flanders Fields. And, of course, Flanders Fields represented World War One, and Ralph was saying he has a picture of a cemetery in Europe. I guess it was in France, where they have certainly divided the cemetery into how many portions?
Okay, there's 8. They've divided the cemetery into 8 sections.
This is an American cemetery.
That's correct.
With 14,000.
14,000 Americans. And the cemetery is divided into 8 sections, and each section has trees on all 4 sides. So 8 times 4 would be, obviously, 32. And then there's a one more set of trees on the outside of the entire cemetery for a total of 33. I don't think that's a coincidence. And then when you count the number of trees on the long side of each one of those rectangles, 8 rectangles, there's exactly 33 of them as well. So someone planned that tree, and it sounds like someone was a Mason. I don't know if you know this, Dr. Stan. I'm sure maybe you've heard this already. History Channel reported that World War One ended on the 11th hour of the 11th day and the 11th minute, I think it was. 11 plus 11 plus 11 just happens to be, once again, 33. Isn't that an interesting coincidence?
Well, it certainly is. And I think that it's so important that we understand the significance of numerology when you're dealing with these occult organizations.
Well, the point is this, Dr. Stan, the world is covered with symbols, especially like on the back of our dollar bill. And when you analyze those and develop the information, it's full of Masonic symbols. And the question is, why do we as Americans not know what those symbols mean?
Well,
I've been running around this country since 1985 speaking on this subject and asking anyone in the audience to comment. Tell me what these symbols mean. I can't find anybody that knows, Dr. Stan. Why is that?
Well, of course, it's been very carefully kept secret. The last thing they want the American people to know is that those symbols on the back of the dollar bill are truly Masonic. But Masonry is simply a modern-day manifestation of the ancient mystery religions. And this is really what it's all about. Masonry, of course, is simply one of a series of these secret societies that tie into the Rosicrucians and the Templars and Gnostics and the Kabbalists and certainly the teachings of Pythagoras and Plato and going right back to the time of Nimrod and ancient Babylon. And there has been this continuity of secret societies since that time. But what most Americans do not understand is that the United States has a destiny, at least according to the mystery religions. It is to lead the world into the new world order, the new world religion. And that is why today we have military bases in 720 military bases throughout the world. We have military bases in 130 nations. They're using our military and our financial power to bring about this world government. And that's what is really going on over in the Middle East. And that is why we're going into a war with Iran. And people must understand that we're not being told the truth, because the American people, they want to get out of Iran. They certainly don't want to expand the war over there. I think there are very, very few people who really feel that attacking Iran is going to bring this war to a close or is going to solve our problems.
You said there's the Army soldiers in 130 nations?
We have American soldiers stationed in 130 nations.
And 720 bases.
720 bases. We spend more on our military than all of the rest of the nations of the world put together. And we do that because, we have to protect ourselves against who the enemy, whoever that enemy is today.
But, Dr. Stan, there's a concealed symbolism there. Do you
sure.
Think you can see
that?
Right. Look at it. 130, remove the zero, you get 13. Remove the zero on 720, you get 72. And those are the two magic numbers of the Masonic Lodge.
Sure.
In other words, the Masons are involved. That's no coincidence. There are 130 bases.
No.
Because if you add the numbers together, you get really 13 and 72. And 72 is a magic, mystical number for the Masons as well. It just shows you how serious this whole problem is. We don't know how important the Masons are, except for those like you and I who dig out the information from their own literature. There's something going on here, and it deeply involves the Masonic Lodge.
Well, I certainly agree with you, and I think it's so important that we understand that Masonry isn't the only organization. It's one of many, but it is a very significant organization because it has so many members here in the United States. And good people, many of them good people, who do not understand that they are being used and that they have been drawn into the worship of the wrong God. And, of course, God will not look kindly upon that. You know, it's one thing if you get to stand before the great white throne of judgment and say, I didn't know. Well, of course, first of all, for the Mason, he joins a lodge, he goes to Masonic funerals, and he's always told that he will stand before the great white throne of judgment upon Judgment Day. He doesn't understand that no Christian stands before the great white throne of judgment. That is the place, the judgment of the damned. And if you're a Mason out there, you go to the Revelation and read it up. This is absolutely right. They just don't want to tell you that by joining the Masonry and pledging to support their God, who is not the God of the Bible, but is Yabalal, of course, you are committing yourself on Judgment Day to stand before the great white throne, the judgment of the damned. Go ahead, Ralph.
Okay, Dr. Stan, I think you sell or you know about David Overson's book called The Secret Symbols of the Dollar Bill.
Yes, we carry that one. I think we carry his Secret Architects of the Nation's Capital as well.
Yeah, well, this book, I just bought it, I guess probably 6 months ago or so, and read it. That book is a wealth of information on it, and it appears as if David Overson's a member of the Masonic Lodge. The book was someplace in there. I think there's an introduction by Henry, or what's his name, Carl Kleinneck, the sovereign commander, grand commander of the Masons at the time. He wrote the introduction in it. I believe that's where it is. One. And so this man is a Mason, and he's telling things that I had never known myself are inside the back of our and the front of our dollar bill. The numbers 13, 32, and 33, they're everywhere, and it's all Masonic. And I asked myself, why are the Masons designing our dollar bill, designing the Great Seal of the United States, building the architecture, laying out the city of our nation? What's going on? Why? When was the last time we voted for a man because he was a Mason? I've never done that.
Well, I think what our listeners really need to do, we have, of course, we'll tell you in just a moment how to get Ralph's material. We carry a couple of DVDs. One is called The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning. The other is, of course, it's called Riddles in Stone, that answer exactly the questions Ralph is asking. But, Ralph, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your ministry and get your excellent material?
Well, you're very kind, Doug. And if people want to go to the website, that might be the quickest way to do this. It's just Ralph, R-A-L-P-H, and then there's a dash, no space, just a dash, and then Epperson with two P's, E as in Edward, P-P-E-R-S-O-N, ralph-epperson.com, and that's my website on the on my books and videos and booklets, etc. It's all there. If you want to call me, if you've got some information you think I should know or want to challenge me or whatever, I have an 800 number, which I give on shortwave all over the world all the time. I guess that makes me kind of strange, I guess. 800-422-3888. 800-422-3888, and I'd be happy to talk to anyone anytime they call.
All right, very good. Well, I certainly, Ralph has a lot of information. He's been at this as long as I have, and certainly his book. Of course, we carry some of them, The Unseen Hand. We carry The New World Order. We carry The Conspiracy Against, or Masonry, The Conspiracy Against Christianity. But Ralph has a lot of DVDs and videos and other things he's written, which certainly will throw a great deal of light onto what's going on in the world today. And until people understand there really are secret societies, there really is another dimension. And of course, this is what the Mason is getting into, even though he doesn't understand this. But of course, as Manly P. Hall said, you know, when the warrior on the block has mastered has learned the secret of his trade, then he will of Masonry, he will have the seething energies of Lucifer in his hands. And that comes from the book, The Lost Keys of Freemasonry, which incidentally is available for Greater Liberty. It's not listed among our books, but you can call it and specifically request it. It's a research book. We wouldn't want people to think we were supporting it. But, you know, when, of course, the leading Mason of the 20th century talks about, you know, this is what Masonry is about, having the seething energies of Lucifer in your hands, people ought to stop and say, what's he talking about? Well, very simply, he's talking about now you'll have Lucifer's power. You can, of course, utilize Lucifer to advance your agenda.
Well, just for the matter, for those who might not know who Lucifer is, Dr. Stan, why don't you tell us?
No, why don't you go ahead and tell us?
Well, Lucifer is used in the Bible as the name, one of the names of Satan, the devil. So what Dr. Stan just said is that Manly P. Hall, one of the great Masons of all time, wrote that you will have the seething energies of the devil in your hands. And Albert Pike wrote that Lucifer was the light bearer and that we were to doubt it not, which means that the Masons are Luciferians. They worship Lucifer, Satan, the devil. That is the great architect of the universe. That's a matter of proof, not a matter of theory, not a matter of speculation. It's in their own literature.
But because the average Mason really doesn't understand that, does he, Ralph?
No, that's true. And boy, I'll tell you, I wish I could have a dollar for everyone I've ever talked to. It's amazing. They won't even read their own literature. That really staggers my mind. I don't understand it. I don't know if you know this, Dr. Stan. I did a TV interview in Tampa, Florida, with John Robinson, who later went on to become a 32nd and then even a 33rd degree Mason. And during that interview, I had done the program once before in Tampa. It's a little half-hour Phil Donahue type thing where the what I call the obligatory blonde on the 6 o'clock news. Every state's TV station has to have at least one blonde on their, in their news team. So anyway, she did this little half-hour program, I think from 12:30 to 1. They had the news from 12 to 12:30 and this little half-hour program. So I went on there once to talk about masonry, and the producer called me, I guess, a couple months later and said, your appearance on that program stirred up more phone calls than all of our other guests in my 15 years of work on this station. Would you be willing to debate a Mason? I said, if you can arrange a debate with a Mason, you tell me when and where, and I'll be there. Well, she called back and said, we've been trying for months now to find a Mason who will debate you. There's not one in Tampa, Florida. And then John Robinson showed up. He was not a Mason, but he was writing, had written a book. What was it called? I can't remember the name of it right now. And so he was touring the country for the Masons, but not a Mason. So he came, and we met, and we talked. And I walked in and did the program for half an hour, and when I walked into the room, I had forgotten there were bleachers in there, and I bet there must have been at least 100 Masons, and women as well, men and women alike, inside that room, women being from Eastern Star, Rainbow Girls, or whatever it was, Job's Daughters. And they did not like me, Dr. Stan. Whenever I was using their own literature, I had a copy of Morals and Dogma and the book called The Concordant Orders of Freemasonry, written, I think, in 1891, in which it clearly shows that I had the Bible, the Masonic Bible, and this Concordant book. That's what it was. And I had the cover of the Bible had a star with one point down. And I showed that to the camera, and of course they couldn't see it in the audience. But I was talking about that star with one point down on the cover of a King James Version of the Bible. Of course, it's a symbol of the Eastern Star of Freemasonry.
And I think it's so important that our listeners understand that if the point is down, that's a satanic star. If the point is up, as it is on the American flag, that is, of course, not a satanic star. It's just a plain old star. So, but they specifically put the point down. It deifies, it's a sign of go to Menzies or a satanic star. Every Satanist knows that. And I'm sure every Mason, well, I'm not sure every Mason knows that. But anyway, go ahead.
I had the book that was written by the Masons, and they said that about the star. The star with one point down was the star of Lucifer, Satan, the devil. It said it in their own book. I had it. It was in there twice. And I flipped to the pages, and as I'm showing this to the camera and the people in Tampa who are watching, these Masons were buzzing. They were not very pleased. But I was using their own literature to make my point. I wasn't making this up. So after the half-hour program was over, Mr. Robinson left quietly, but that wasn't the case with me. I don't know whether this policeman, he was an off-duty policeman, Tampa Police Department, was in the studio, and he was within about 10 feet of me at all the time I was on the air. About, I would guess, 100, easily 100 people in the audit in that room with the bleachers, I would guess about 10 of them came forward to not just, they didn't come down to talk to me. I was thinking, gee, if I was a Mason and heard that, I'd want to see that book. Not one of those Masons or Eastern Star women, not one of them wanted to see the book written by the Masons that said their star on the cover, their Eastern Star on the cover of the Masonic Bible was the star of Lucifer, Satan, the devil. Now, I don't understand that, Dr. Stan. If I had seen that and was there as a Mason, I'd want to see that book. Wouldn't you? Not one of them did. And boy, they looked at me like, if looks could kill, I would have been gone.
I hope they just smiled at them, because it's the only thing you can do.
Oh, yes, I was great. But the policeman stepped between them and me. I guess he saw that what was going on. He thought these people were out to harm this young man. So then the policeman walked me out to my car in the parking lot, and as I got out there, it was about those 8 or 10 people who came down to, really, they were angry, and they were looking at me with this anger. They were out standing by a car on the other side of the parking lot. And as I walked out with the policeman, boy, they looked at me again. I got in my car, quietly started it, and got away, left. That was the end of the episode. But I'm telling you, I don't understand why Masons will not read their own literature. That's the problem.
Because they are spiritually blinded. It is like so many things, Ralph. People are spiritually blinded. They cannot see the truth. And, of course, when you challenge their beliefs, you challenge the very essence of their being. And all we can do is keep trying to tell people the truth and point out, of course, that this is a spiritual battle, and they better make sure on whose side they're on. And I'm sure it must have been very, very frustrating for you. I've been in similar situations, not quite like that. You're a much better debater on masonry than I am, but people have to understand, we're involved in a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Western civilization, and most people have no idea that the spiritual battle is even going on. And, of course, those people who try to tell the truth will be attacked and demonized and vilified. Because, really, Satan is able to influence people's outlook. He and his demons are here. They're very real. And, of course, they're moving to plunge America and the whole world into World War III very soon. Well, Ralph, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, you're very kind, Dr. Stan. I appreciate it. Always doing your program. The chance you give me to explain my views, I would urge your listeners to go to my website and do some browsing. You'll find some very incredible material there. I've done some research on things that many people in this nation have not looked into at all. And I don't know why I've done that. It's just one step led to another, and finally I put out books that are like my masonry book. As far as I know, it's the first one ever written on the subject to prove that the Masons at the 30th degree take a vow with a sword in their hand to destroy Christianity. And Albert Pike, who wrote the rituals for the 30th degree and all 33 of the degrees, wrote that that was, quote, the true purpose, unquote, vowed at the 30th degree. If you want to see that book, yeah, go to my website, and Dr. Stan, you're selling it as well. Get in touch with Dr. Stan. In fact, I'd appreciate if you want to do it, get it from Dr. Stan. Help his ministry as well. Buy the book and read it yourself. It's written from their own rituals.
Amen to that. Of course, the books are excellent. We recommend them, and we'll mention later how people can get them if they're interested. But of course, Ralph, certainly a regular guest on Radio Liberty, and until people begin to understand that there really are secret societies. If you really doubt, of course, that the Masons worship Lucifer, there's a wonderful DVD we're carrying called Ripples in Stone. You'll see one of the major Masonic apologists trying to explain why, of course, the name of their god includes the name of Baal, who is the Lucifer. I think he was sorry he ever got into that. It wasn't even a debate. He was just apologizing, trying to explain it. It was pretty hard to do. Have you ever discussed that with a Mason?
No, I once in a while I get phone calls from Masons, not very often, but they generally don't want to read, they don't want to study their own literature, and that's what startles me.
Well, as I say, I really believe there's a spiritual blindness there, and our job is to try to reach as many people as we can in the time that's allotted to us. And certainly one of the outstanding researchers on this whole subject of secret societies, and specifically Masonry, is our guest here. Ralph Epperson, his books, The New World Order, The Unseen Hand, and Masonry, The Conspiracy Against Christianity, all vitally important.
Thank you very much, Dr. Sanders.
Hey, well, thank you so very much for being with us. Bye-bye. Okay, fine. Well, our guest then is Ralph Epperson. We're certainly very, very glad he was willing to come with us this Memorial Day, and of course we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's first hour, and we've got a fascinating second hour for you. We hope that you'll be here, and of course you'll enjoy the program with us. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and let me just read another poem. I love poetry, and I think that sometimes days like today are the time to read it. I was there when all our boys, my age, went off to fight a war. And I was there when those same men returned to us no more. I've entertained those heroes on their barren beds of pain, those glory-gutted veterans who to this day remain. Have you ever been in a holding pen where they keep these dregs of war? Behind sad eyes, you hear their cries. Was this worth fighting for? I've seen those haunting graveyards, causing tears to blur my eyes. Those endless rows of crosses making fields of silent white. Their voices plead, remember me, I've heard my country's call. I, too, was free to hide or flee. Instead, I gave my all. But while we're remembering those who died to make men free, and thinking of those crosses, signs of death for liberty, let us not forget the one who, when he heard his father's call, who too was free to hide or flee, but chose to give his all. He faced a world at war with sin, no friends marched by his side, no flags waved in his honor, all alone for us he died. But that grave could not keep him, nor ever still his breath. He won that war to end all wars, demolished demon death. So remember those white crosses and those sacrifices grim. We remember, too, the cross of Christ. There's hope because of him. All hail the power of Jesus' name. We still can sing his praise. Because his cross cures death's dark loss and bridges eternal days. And that was, of course, written by Annette Adams. We carry her book on poetry, and certainly we'll go ahead and still carry one of her books under any circumstances. Why? Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is the time we want to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We do hope that many of you will seriously consider joining the Radio Liberty family and helping us as we reach out across America to try to educate the American people about the fact we are involved in a spiritual war for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And then, of course, those of you who have not, of course, read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, or the latest DVD, seen the latest DVD, Forbidden Secret, or our new four-tape set on The Secret, Behind the Secret, going into Rhonda Byrne, who has introduced millions of Americans into Rosicrucianism through her films and through her book. Those of you who certainly have not yet read Ralph Everson's wonderful books, The New World Order, The Unseen Hand, Masonry, The Conspiracy Against God, and then, of course, Chris Pinto's wonderful books entitled, I should say, Chris Pinto's wonderful DVDs, The Secret Mysteries of America's Beginnings, and Riddles in Stone, The Secret Architecture of Our Nation's Capital. All of these are vitally important, and if you'd like more information on them, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Then, of course, we would hope that many of you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. You can listen to our radio programs there, actually 5 hours a day, or at least indirectly. We're on 3 hours a day at that website, 2 hours a day on other websites, and we have a unique opportunity to reach out across America. We hope many of you will partner with us in this endeavor at this very important time in history. And, of course, if you want to know who the foe is these dark spiritual forces intent upon the destruction of humanity. So we'll be back here in just a moment to wrap up this evening's program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views I've expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and we welcome your calls out across America ordinarily, but right now I ask you to hold your calls, not put them in unless we specifically ask for them. Because we have this on the line, our good friend Reverend Thomas Horn. We've known Tom for a long time. He's written a couple of books on spiritual warfare and the gods that walk among us. And more recently, he's actually put up a wonderful website called the Raiders website, one of the finest looking ones we have up there on the internet. And he's actually written a book. What's the title of that book, Tom?
Well, now we have a brand new book called Nephilim Stargates, and that's it's actually I would say it's the hard science and history behind the book that you have that people can get from you that's called The Ahriman Gate.
All right, why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit now. Is the new book available?
The new book is available now for pre-order. It will not actually be in print until July 1.
All right, what's it about?
And I will say, and I'm very happy about this, that it's already in the top 1,000 books at Amazon, it's not even going to be in print for about 4 weeks, so I'm really excited about that. Well, of course, you know, Dr. Montes, the interesting thing behind this this book is that it's a result of the research that we were doing when we were writing the book, The Ahriman Gate. We wanted to make the science in that book believable. So it required us to take a look at how does biotechnology and transgenics and genetic modification, how would these sciences actually be applied in a real world way today to modify creatures, and what might the results of that be? And of course, in our novel, The Ahriman Gate, we put a biblical prophetic slant on that, in that it could be used to resurrect biblical Nephilim, extinct Nephilim. And, you know, Dr. Montes, the interesting thing about being on your show is that this is the second book that I wrote as a result partly of being on your show some years ago.
Really?
Yeah. I told you this once before, but it's been maybe a year or so ago, I first started out maybe 12, 13 years ago, and I noticed these sciences, and I read a story one day about transgenic science, and I had never even heard the term transgenics before. But in this was like a Reuters story or something, and they were talking about how that year fully 1/4 of all federal research grants were going to go towards transgenic science. And I thought, well, you know, if 1/4 of our taxpayers' dollars are going into this science, I should know something about it. I mean, our taxpayers' dollars, that is, that are earmarked for grants of that nature. I should know something about what this even means. And I started looking into it, and I was actually astonished by the idea that we had an interest in crossing species barriers and actually merging the DNA of one species with the DNA of another species. And this struck me as something that not only was not something that would have been allowed for in either the creation model, or let's say you don't subscribe to the creation model and you're just an evolutionist, it also would not have been allowed for in evolution, that we were doing something that was outside of the natural order, regardless of what that might mean, and so that it should be something that would be a concern to everybody.
Hold that thought. I will be back here in just a minute. I will tell you, every listener should be concerned, because these people are playing God. Go ahead, pick up the story there.
Well, we were talking about how people should be concerned about biotechnology, and anyway, I started looking into this cloning, transgenics, And this was back early, 12 years ago or so, when the term transgenic was a brand new term. There was no real conversation going on about funding for Stemline, the creating of these different chimeric human-animal embryonic specimens for the use in studying medicines. I mean, these are all relatively brand new terms that came out of this science that I first started looking into. Well, anyway, this raised questions to me, and I was very concerned, Dr. Monteith, as you know, that I am a person of faith, and it struck me as odd that none of the leaders of the faith community were talking about what some of the ethical issues might be that would be raised out of this science. And so I started looking into it. I did a little research. I wrote a couple of editorials. One of those editorials got picked up and received fairly wide publication. And it was out of the blue that Cal Thomas, the syndicated columnist for the LA Times, had read that article, and he contacted me. And at that time, he was the host of CNN's Crossfire, and they talked about this a little bit. And he wanted to share with me his opinion that what I had written to him was evidence that the world had to be winding down, that we were entering a quickening time, a quickening of events that foreshadowed end-time biblical prophecy in his point of view. Well, I had just read his email to me, and at that same time, I had been picked up by Cloud 10 Pictures, wanted me to promote a new film that they put out called Deceived. And I remember that you called me. Now, I had been on your show years earlier with my first book, Spiritual Warfare, but I hadn't been on your show for a long time. You called me out of the blue because you were participating in their promotion of that film that had Louis Gossett Jr. and Judd Nelson. And so I had just read this thing from Cal Thomas, and I went on your show, and I asked you, you know, in this movie from Cloud 10 Pictures called Deceived, this person in this movie starts developing a telekinesis as a result of being altered by their involvement with these shadowy, invisible beings. And that I had asked you, as a retired medical doctor, if you believed that we would actually enter into a time where we would start developing these post-human, transhuman-like abilities, like telekinesis, if you thought there was anything to that. Could this happen through human enhancement using the sciences of transgenics and biotech and genetic modification and so on? And that you, at the time, you had actually just returned from...
Hold that thought, and we'll be back in just a moment with Tom Horn. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Tom was just saying that it was some time ago when we talked to Tom, maybe a decade ago, and I was helping to promote a DVD and VHS called Deceived with Leo Gossert, actor, and it was all about the military and how the military was getting into the supernatural, trying to tap into the other dimension. And, of course, at that time, the question was raised about this new type of genetic engineering, a transgenic engineering, when we begin to create new species and insert, of course, animal genes into humans and human genes and animals. And so pick up the stories there.
Well, and the fact that the more I was researching this material, the more concerned I was becoming about what some of the ethical or philosophical ramifications might be, and that nobody was talking about it, and that when I was on your show, I asked you about it, and you certainly had been thinking about it, and you had just come back, and I can't remember this story in detail, but you had just come back from a convention of some kind where there were different people who are still involved in the most current advances in medical technology and that sort of thing. And that there was something out of that convention that had led you to think that, you know, people, that our sciences were, in fact, moving in a direction that they were willing to start crossing these barriers, which we had never crossed before. And I went off that program with you that night, and I thought, this is astonishing to me that I write this one article and it gets a guy like Cal Thomas certainly should know what the current news is, and he had never heard about it. And I was able to verify that a fourth of all federal research grants that year were going to transgenic sciences, and then went on your show, and you had heard something about it, and you were very concerned about it. I thought, well, you know, somebody ought to be writing something about this, and they're not. And so I started compiling as many research papers, anything I could put my hands on, as well as also making contact with some of the actual people that were involved in this new cutting-edge biotech, anybody who was willing to talk to me. And along the way, I ran into a professor friend of mine who convinced me that to write this book, I should really write it as a novel so that it would have the widest possible exposure, because if I wrote it as a stuffy textbook of some kind, you know, there'd be fewer people that would want to read it, and that I then should weave into that story what some of my concerns were, which is what I did. It became the all-time best-selling book for the publishing house. It's got 50 five-star reviews. It's been number 23 of all books in the CBA market in the United States in the last year. So, I mean, the book has done very well. We're very happy about that. But the thing that was the most thrilling for me was what we were finding in the real research. The research behind this was astonishing, because it took me on a little trail that I wasn't ready for, in that I started looking at modern biotechnology. But as I was researching the cross-blending of species, that took me to a story where in ancient history there had been a time when these so-called gods came down, and they started tinkering with human and animal DNA, and they actually created for themselves offspring through this biotechnological tinkering with human and animal DNA, and this was called the Nephilim in the Bible. But I was finding this story through all these different ancient mythos, and it was just astonishing to me. It was almost as if we were looking at or retracing the actual first record in history of transgenic science, which had been conducted by these super intelligences who, for their own reasons, were the first people to open the Ahriman Gate, thus the title for my book. But I started wondering now, Dr. Monteith, if man, in his willingness today to play God, was actually repeating something, rushing back into a science that had been first introduced on Earth thousands of years ago, and that ultimately led to the judgment of God. And astonishingly, I found this record in all these ancient historical books, and all of them talked about these super intelligences that determined they were going to blend these various species to create for themselves some pathway into which they could extend themselves into our three-dimensional reality. And this led immediately and instantly to the judgment of God.
Now, because what you're really talking about is at the time in the days of Noah, when, of course, the sons of God came down and mated with women and created the Nephilim. These really were demonic beings, or perhaps fallen angels, I'm not sure which, but it was that, you know, cross-genics, experimentation in those days that led to God to intervene and destroy everything on Earth. And, of course, I really believe it's absolutely right. This is exactly what happened. And we're doing it all over again. And we were told in the scriptures, when the Lord was asked, but what will be the signs of your coming? And his remark is, and in the days as it was in the days of Noah.
Right.
Go right ahead, Tom.
Well, you're absolutely right. And so this huge question then was lingering before me. If it was demonic then, is it demonic now? If it led to judgment then, will it lead to judgment now? And if it brought about the incarnation of unusual beings that were only part human and part something else, and this astonishing story, I mean, anybody that, if you don't even include any of the extra biblical records, if you just look at the scripture, you see this model of God who is otherwise unwilling that any should perish. He's long-suffering, patient. He commands Israel to extend this opportunity for people to come in and to become proselytes. People from other nations can come in and have to be treated correctly. He didn't want people ill-treated that might try to find lodging in the camp of Israel. So you find this model of God, but boy, then all of a sudden when it comes to the Nephilim, it's kill them on the spot. If you see one, kill it. And it just illustrates that there was something entirely different. And the story then has to do with the methodology, what appeared to be a record of advanced science in a way, what looked like traces of modern biotechnology. where in the Hebrew Bible, but also in the Assyrian, in the Egyptian, in the Greek, all these other great mythologies, this story exists of these gods who, in order to materialize, in order to take three-dimensional expression, for some reason, it required them to corrupt the creation, to change the creation, and to blend the various species in order to make this pathway, this portal through which they could extend themselves into our material world. For instance, one of the ancient texts, the book of Jasher, which is referred to in the Bible, in the book of Joshua 10 and also in 2 Samuel 1, the book of Jasher says this, in Jasher 4:18, it says, after the fallen angels went into the daughters of men, the sons of men began teaching the mixture of animals of one species with the other in order to provoke the Lord, end quote. And I started finding text after text like that that were supportive of the Genesis 6 story, and that also not only corroborated it, but added this mix that these things were blending animals and humans. The very thing now, Dr. Monteith, that we're doing in laboratories in the United States, in Australia, and as of last week, I guess, we just got permission in the UK to start creating these embryonic specimens, which ultimately are going to lead to not just embryonic specimens, but the enhancement of the human species. A new stage is being called in human evolution. Our president's own Council on Bioethics has said this is what this is leading to, a post-human creation. It's where we're going. And yet, even in, of course, anybody who's read our novel, The Ahriman Gate, and anybody who reads the new book, Nephilim Stargates, the full title of that new book, by the way, it has a subtitle. The full title is Nephilim Stargates, and the subtitle is The Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers. Because we are speculating that all of what we are doing right now in biotechnology, not only ultimately and originally, led to the creation of Nephilim and then judgment from God, but that there is this prophetic possibility that these creatures are going to return again. And I found various places in the Bible that indicate that this could happen again in the end of time and could once again lead to judgment. And as you quoted a moment ago, Jesus saying, "What shall be the signs of thy coming? As it was in the days of Noah." What was going on in the days of Noah could be happening again at the end of time. And what was going on in the days of Noah? These beings requiring this vital energy associated with three-dimensional life forms so that they could blend these beings and bring themselves through into our reality. They left their first estate. They came down, and they somehow could join themselves with women, and they brought themselves through into our reality, and because of it, faced a peculiar judgment from God.
And, you know, I think, Tom, if anybody who's ever studied the stories of alien abductions, of course, most people, Christians, sort of poo-poo this idea of alien abductions, and yet there seems to be a great deal of valid evidence that it has occurred. I believe these truly are demonic beings. I don't think they're from outer space at all, but so much of this involves a sexual reproduction, obtaining sperm from men and eggs from women, as if these beings, these demonic beings, of course, want to experiment with reproduction, human reproduction, in defiance of God's laws, and somehow harness this so they can control it. So go right ahead.
Well, you're right. I mean, even and that was the other thing I found, that not only were there records in the ancient mythological records, not only were there sacred records which were part of the Bible, but there were also records down through time that were peculiar. And I noticed that some of the secular researchers, some of the better secular researchers, maybe guys like Jacques Vallée and others, who had not taken a particular position on what this might be, but they saw these parallels between biblical demonology and historical church demonology and what was happening in alien abduction.
And even though he wasn't a Christian, saw the metaphysical component of so much of what was going on, and probably the leading UFO expert of all time said, "This is metaphysical from another dimension." Go right ahead, Tom.
Well, and it was I think it was Jacques Vallée or John Keel, one of those guys, who first termed this phrase vital energy. Molecular matter associated with three-dimensional life forms seems to be required for some reason, maybe as a construct material, but by these beings who are abducting or tinkering with people who are being subjected to these alien abductions. And, you know, because I am a Christian, and I do talk about some of this subject matter. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be giving a one-and-a-half-hour lecture at the Roswell Festival this year, and the lecture is the same title as the title of my book, Nephilim, Stargates, the Year 2012, and the Return of the Watchers, where I will be discussing at length the very matter that you and I are talking about right now, that something has been happening down through time, and that it also might be related to what's going on in alien abduction, ufology, and things like that. And what I say to Christians or other people of faith is when they say they have a problem with the idea that these beings could create some alien body or something into which they're putting their spirit or some bizarre thing like that could be happening, which is sometimes reported, you know, through the harvesting of eggs and other matter where they're fusing themselves, their creation with our creation, they have a problem with the idea that these things could create. And what I've said is, no, they're not creating. It's the Creator alone stood in the beginning and spoke and said, let there be. That's the Hebrew word haya. And what it means is He alone has the power to command raw atomic nuclear energy to come from nothing and then to form itself into a specified molecular form, whether it be a tree or a human or grass or whatever. He alone had the ability to speak into existence these things. However, once this matter was created and it came into its own molecular form, then these beings could do the same thing that scientists are doing in Australia and the United States and Canada the UK today, where they are blending these various species to create whole brand new life forms, things which neither creation nor evolution have allowed for, could have been done, manipulation by these so-called gods in order to construct for themselves some three-dimensional expression. In the Hebrew text, that's what it says, that they saw the daughters of men, that they were fit extensions. The sense there is that it was something that they used to bring themselves through into our reality, and it brought the judgment of God. Even in the book of Enoch and the Old Testament, the use of vital energy as a construct material for forming this dimensional pathway is evident. If you read the 7th chapter of the book of Enoch, it says that they not only sinned against the women, but they sinned against the animals. And that goes along with what Jasher was saying, that as soon as these angels came down and started mating with women, men started teaching the blending of these different species. And so you have to ask yourself, if the only reason that the Watchers involved themselves with antediluvian women was because of their physical beauty, what was this other business about blending animals and DNA? And what I tell people is that you have to admit that even if those ancient stories are nothing more than lore, which I don't believe, I believe they were in fact a record, but even if you don't buy that, the metaphorical resemblance to parts to what's going on today with the move towards transhumanism is astonishing. Even the secular press are referring to these creations as chimeras, and chimera is from Greek mythology. And the
hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is Thomas Horn, and we're really talking about this concept of chimera, this blending of the species, and of course the things that are being done today in violation of God's laws. And of course the question arises, how much of this has truly a scientific and how much of it is demonic in origin? Is this a vehicle by which the beings from the other dimension are gaining access to our dimension? And a lot of people, Christians especially, will say that couldn't be true. And yet, of course, we're told over and over again in the scriptures there is another dimension. We should avoid the fortune tellers and mediums and diviners, and certainly that these things are not imaginary, they're real, but we should have nothing to do with them. I mean, this Christian faith is a very simple faith. The other faith, certainly much more complicated, would allow this sort of thing in man's quest to be as God. And that's the big problem today. Are we going to obey God and love God and fear God, or are we going to try to become God? Because when we do, of course, why we risk eternal damnation. Pick the story up there, Tom.
Yeah, and what we do, I was saying that the secular press has picked up on this term chimera to describe these creations that we are now making, and it's because it's metaphorical. It's something that reminds them of the stories of myth, the blending of these different species. But there might be another metaphor here, Dr. Monteith, and that is that the chimera was a hybrid beast in Greek mythology that foreshadowed natural disaster. And I see that as a metaphor, too, that transgenically blending species, living organisms, people, food, animals, that could be it could foreshadow natural disaster. It could be a Pandora's box. But in any case, it was most interesting to me to discover, when I was doing this research and studying modern biotechnology and especially transgenics, that it led me back to ancient history, where it seemed like the same story had unfolded once before, and that the record of that event had been recorded around the world. And then what you were saying a moment ago is, if you also now add ufology and alien abduction and things like that, perhaps this has been happening nonstop throughout history. This record of super intelligent beings who have an interest in cross-blending the species, and at least in some records, it was for the purpose of bringing them from their dimension into ours to incarnate themselves into our reality. And that whatever this activity was about, it was certainly something that immediately brought judgment from God in the days of old.
And really, I think to most people, it's so difficult to take a step from studying the scriptures into looking and seeing what's going on today. And yet, certainly Monsanto and the other genetic engineering companies really are working and taking, say, fish genes and putting them in tomatoes. And they're trying to take genes from human beings and put them into rats and other things. And what are we doing? What is going to be the effect of altering our food crops, our major food crops, with biological engineering? And all the studies show that this is harmful. Why are we destroying the crops that God gave us to feed men? And now we're finding tremendous shortages of water, droughts, not only in Australia, but here in the United States, and all sorts of strange, certainly physical things that are happening that forebode to me that we're entering some very difficult times. Go ahead, Tom.
Well, you know, it was a few weeks ago, there was a writer for Wired magazine, a woman by the name of Elizabeth Svoboda, and she contacted me and wanted to know if I was willing to provide her some information for an article that she was writing for Wired magazine. And she had came across, doing some research for this article, came across an editorial that I had raised, which raised caution about some of this experimentation with crops and things like that. And she wondered if I'd be willing to provide some talking points for the article, because she said that so far all of the scientists that she had talked to were, quote, pretty gung-ho about the practice. And she thought it'd be important to provide some balance to the article. So I thanked her for giving me the invitation to be part of this Wired magazine article, and I sent her a short summary of some of the areas, certainly not all of the areas by far, but some of the areas where I thought that concerns about some of this science ought to be being raised. And thank God, Dr. Monteith, thank God for your radio show. You are one of the few people out there right now who is putting this in the public's mind. And the only thing you can do is just keep beating the drum on some of these issues, because these issues are going to impact this generation in ways that we are not ready for. And people need to know this information. So I take time out of my day to respond to this, Elizabeth.
Oh, hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Thomas Horn, and he's contacted by Elizabeth from Wired Magazine. Now, I don't know how many of our listeners know much about Wired Magazine, but Wired is pretty far out. But that's all right. These are people who are really concerned about what's going on. I've been on their television network, and it might not be something that I would watch, but let me tell you, millions of people, young people, inquiring people, concerned people, confused people are watching Wired television and reading Wired magazine. And so anyway, what happened when you contributed?
Well, yeah, I mean, they're considered to be on the cutting edge on a lot of different technological issues, and they have a massive audience. And so, you know, I get invitations all the time to be on radio shows and things, and frankly, I don't have time. I honestly don't have time to do all the show invitations I get. I always do yours because I love you and I believe in what you do. But with Wired Magazine, I know they have a giant audience. And so I agreed to be interviewed for her. She was writing an article, and the name of the article was Farm Animals Crank Out Drugs. And the word farm was spelled P-H-A-R-M. And they're talking about transgenically altered animals being used for the production of different drugs. I agreed to do it. I sent her some concerns. But when the article was published a week later, I was surprised that none of my notes made it into the final story. So I started not to even ask about it, but I thought, yeah, I'm going to. And I sent her back an email, and I said, why was nothing that I want none of the issues that I raised added included in this article? And she said, well, actually, she said, I included all of your issues in the article, but they were edited out by the editors at Wired Magazine because they wanted to put a positive slant on the article. That was the bottom line. And that the things that I was raising were concerns, red flags. And so let me just quickly list these for you because your audience would want to know about these. The first thing that I said to her is, what will the long-term impact on the environment and health-related issues be as a result of these farm animals? I mean, we've already seen with genetically modified crops that unpredictable things can occur when living organisms are modified in unnatural ways. There's already good, solid testing that has shown that these things can affect our health. That's one issue. The second issue is that transgenic research that includes inserting animal DNA into humans and human DNA into animals at the embryonic level, which is already happening in the U.S. and different countries around the world, at some point this can escape its control environment. And if there's anything we've learned...
Hold that thought right there, Tom. We'll be right back. And, of course, Tom is simply pointing out that when you begin taking animal genes and putting them into humans or other animals into humans and then human genes into other animals or crops, that this can escape. And this has happened time and again. That's why almost the entire rice crop in California has been contaminated with a genetically modified type of rice, and we're not sure it's even safe to eat. Or even to feed to animals. We're talking about billions and billions and billions of dollars of lost crops at a time when there's a growing shortage of food in the world. Go ahead there.
That's exactly right, that it can escape its environment. In fact, it will escape its environment. It's really only just a matter of time. We've learned that in our own history, everything from killer bees to the rice crops you're talking about. Anytime we've made anything that we've tried to control, it has a way. I never forget in that movie, you know, Jurassic Park, that silly Ian Malcolm, talking about how nature has a way, and it does. It has a way of getting out of its control environment and escaping into the natural environment and then cross-infecting or cross-breeding. And the thing about these genetically modified crops and other genetically modified species that we are creating is that we don't know how those organisms then are going to cross over into the natural species and how it's going to happen. And the thing is, once it is out of the box, it's impossible to put the genie back in the bottle. And it could lead to hybrid viruses, to prion contamination, new diseases, just simply things that we can't foresee or prepare for. That was the second point that I had made to Wired Magazine. The third point that I made to them was that even animal rights activists are raising questions in their area that have to do with the ethics of altering animals in ways that could be, from their point of view, demeaning to those animals. For instance, creating zombie-like animals that grow in feeder labs and gaze off into space from birth until death. Militarized animals that behave in unnatural, unpredictable ways, and what will happen to them when they cross over into the natural species and start contaminating that species. Humanized animals that become self-aware. And this is also already an ethical issue that's been raised about some of the medical some of the research we've done here in the U.S. where we've created mice that have a percentage of their brain that is a human brain. And the professor there in California at Stanford University, his name is escaping me, but the professor there that wanted that already conducted this research and created mice with 1% human brains wants to now create mice with 100% human brains. And this whole question about what do you do with a mouse that suddenly becomes self-aware and starts questioning its reality and wants to know about God, you then become God. You become God parenti. You suddenly have this responsibility to this creature. I mean, it opens this insane window. Or what about animals that produce human sperm and eggs, which then are used in vitro fertilization to produce a child? And you have to ask, who are the parents? A pair of mice. So it's something that you can't put this in an ethical control box and answer the questions that are going to be being raised. From the animal rights activist point of view. The fourth thing that I raised to Wired Magazine was questions that involved patenting of transgenic seeds and transgenic animals and transgenic plants and even synthetic life forms by these large corporations like Monsanto that threaten to impact the economy of everything from rural workers to farmers and so many other globalist agenda things that it would take several shows on Radio Liberty, Dr. Monteith, to talk about. But I mean, that's another big piece of this puzzle. And then the fifth issue that I raised to Wired Magazine was the patenting of human genes, which is happening now. Michael Crichton had actually written a nonfiction piece for the New York Times just before I had this interview with Wired Magazine, and I pointed out his article to them in which he was talking about gene patenting is not benign and never will be, in which he was talking about how people in the future could die in the future because they might not be able to afford medical treatment as a result of medicines that are owned by patent holders of specific genes related to those persons, and that some of those gene modifications and patents are actually growing out of this same kind of transgenic research that's being done with these so-called farm, PHARM, animals. The sixth issue that I raised with Wired Magazine was, and these of course are the big issues to me, where is biotechnology ultimately heading in redefining what it means to be a human? Now, I've been a guest on Dr. James Hughes' Change Surfer radio show. Hughes is a leading transhumanist. He's the author of Citizen Cyborg, Why Democratic Societies Must Respond to the Redesigned Human of the Future. He's a professor at Trinity College. And I know that he, together with other transhumanists like Nick Bostrom of Oxford University, are eager about these advances in human genetic modification, including transgenics and other forms of merging of the species. They see that as the next step in human evolution, ultimately leading to post-humanity. They're dead serious, and so are many other people in the military and government. There are leading PhDs in universities around the world that are dead serious about this move towards transhumanism. They believe it's going to happen, and frankly, I believe it's going to happen if God doesn't intervene.
So look at anything between man's plan and time and God's plan and eternity. There's an infinite quality of difference, and I really tremble for my country when I reflect that if God is just, his justice will not sleep forever, and he is going to intervene here in a terrible, terrible way.
And that's what I found in history, was that there was this, but there were a transhumanist in Genesis 6, and it led to judgment from God. And Jesus says, as it was in the days of Noah. Did you ever think, Dr. Monteith, did you ever think even 20 years ago that you and I would ever be on a radio show in which we are living in a time where right now, there are human embryos that are being created that are part animal?
I mean, this is so bizarre, so against God's plan for the world. You know, it is indeed frightening because I do not believe God is going to stand idly by. I think all of these scientists they say, gee, we can do it. Look what we can do. I mean, we have the ability. I mean, it's the ultimate in ego without realizing, of course, that the real secret to life is not what I can do, but I mean, what should I do according to God's plan for my life and humanity? And until man becomes subservient to God, there will never be peace on this earth. I think these people are going to revolt against God, and they're going to precipitate God's judgment on this world.
Well, Dr. Monteith, you think that way because you are a great American, and you are a great human, and you are a great Christian, but you do not represent what's happening right now in our leading educational institution.
You're absolutely right. You and I are a minority, and the rest of the people don't even know what's going on. What was that old adage? 1% of the people make things happen. 2% watch things happen, and the rest of the people, they don't even know anything's happening. But our job is to try to make them understand that this all has a spiritual component. You can't understand this genetic engineering without, of course, understanding the spiritual implications of where the world is headed.
Well, that's why we do what we do, and that's why you have one of the best radio programs in the world. And people need to support you, and they need to make sure that they take care of making sure that your voice is reaching out to the largest possible audience. You know that privately, I mean, I've given you my books. I don't want you to pay me anything for them. I want you to use them. I do that because I believe in you, and I want people that are listening to this radio program to understand that you are one of the few people out there right now, one of the last lights, as far as I'm concerned, that need to be supported. And I hope people will pay attention to that. They need to make sure that you have the largest possible reach in your message, because you're one of the few people left who are willing to talk about issues that are more they're far more valuable than the average person can even understand.
Well, I really appreciate your help and support, and I appreciate getting those books, as I think they have such an important message.
Well, so let me just quickly give you these last two. The seventh thing that I sent to Wired Magazine was redefining basic human rights. Now, Hughes, whose show I've been on, he wants, and this has been in the news just in the last couple of weeks, he wants the creation of transgenic chimps and great apes. He wants these animals uplifted genetically so that they can have the same basic human cognitive ability of a child attending school or something. He wants to do that as a way of proving that certain cognition and not humanness is what ought to be the key to constitutional protections and privileges. And, of course, changes to the intrinsic sanctity of human life could pave the way to doing such things as harvesting organs from people like Terry Schiavo. So that's a whole nother piece of that puzzle, which I sent over to Wired Magazine. And then finally, number eight, was I said to them that it was my view that transhumanist views of biotechnology, including transgenics, are opening the door for a new eugenics and social Darwinism. I mean, the whole idea of transhumanism, even admittedly on their part, is to use the fields of biotechnology, nanotechnology, robotics, mind interfacing, all these other related sciences, to create a superior man, the Ubermensch. I mean, the result is going to lead to a classification of persons, the enhanced and the not enhanced. And that's ultimately going to give rise to a new kind of eugenics. So, of course, there's numerous other things that ought to be cautioned about genetic modification and transgenic science, which I could have sent to them, and I told her it was a short list. In fact, now if you start adding to the terms that I gave to them, and which I've written about in my books, if you start now adding the terms synthetic biology, where scientists are now cooking up entirely new proteins and living organisms, things that have never existed before in history as far as we know. They were not even part of creation. And they're combining these with nature's DNA in order not only to mingle known species, but we're making something now that, as far as we know, has never existed before. Dr. Monteith, how can we prepare for something like that? What will the impact on the balance of our of nature be, on the balance of our ecosystem be? What will its impact on our health be? There's no possible way to prepare for what man is doing. And man is doing it now. They're not waiting. And we're not talking about theoretical science. This is happening now. And our president's own former counsel on bioethics, Leon Cass, said that this is the most dangerous technology in the history of the world, and it's placing the animal and human species, as well as all of the living organisms, on the operating table for wholesale redesign, that we are reinterpreting what it means to be an animal, what it means to be a human, what it means to be a superhuman. And then he added this phrase, and I know that this guy's got to have something about God in his heart, because he said, we're also talking about now redefining what it means to be a God. And Professor Francis Fukuyama followed his report in his book, Our Post-Human Future, Consequences of the Biotechnology Revolution, in which he also agreed that this is the most dangerous field in the science of, in the history of man in science, and he thought that it will produce, if man's not careful, it's going to produce an extinction-level event for the human race, a literal Pandora's box. And so I was trying to just get Wired magazine, with their massive audience, to just look at some of these facts that are not my facts. I didn't make them up. These are real issues. These are real issues in this science. And every single one of these points were cut out of their article, and the article actually went on to say, you know, someday if we find a cure to cancer through the merging of these animal species, then nobody will be concerned about it anymore. And I thought, well, how superficial and short-sighted could that comment possibly be? It was just astonishing to me that this article came out, and millions upon millions upon millions of people read this article, and everybody, because you now have an establishment media that's telling people what they ought to think. And that's why what you do, Dr. Monteith, is so important, and I sure hope people can appreciate it.
Well, God's given me the opportunity, and as long as he's given me the opportunity, we're certainly going to take it. I think if people will stop and contemplate what's taking place today, man has replaced God, at least like man would like to think he's replaced God. But it's just, I got to tell you something, it's not going to happen. But he is, of course, interfering with the very essence of what God has created and intent upon destroying it. And then, of course, with the idea he's going to be able to improve it. But does anybody really think that man can improve upon God? I mean, these men must have tremendous egos to honestly think that, and of course I fear that we're unleashing things, you know, on this earth that will have profound impact for generations to come, and are going to bring God's judgment. And I certainly think that what you're saying is absolutely right. I think we are right on the edge of cataclysmic changes, and the average person out there has no idea what's going on. And there's so many things that are happening, and yet nobody can connect the dots. They all seem to be isolated little things, but they're not isolated. Man is challenging God's supremacy, and God will not be mocked.
Well, I hope that we've connected a lot of the dots in our new book, Nephilim, Stargates, the Year 2012 and the Return of the Watchers, because we actually talk about the science and also the history behind what did happen in those ancient days where these super intelligences rebelled against God, mingled animal and human DNA, and led to the epic of the flood, in which God wiped out humanity as a result of what was happening through intermarriage and the spreading of that corrupted DNA. And now we ask the questions about where this might be leading now. And what I would say is that it doesn't really matter what a person's worldview is. Anybody that's listening to this program tonight, they could be religious, they could be atheist, they could be secular humanist, whatever. Everything that is happening in biotech now ought to be being viewed with attentiveness. And that's not to say that there might not be some benefits to humanity that come out of biotech. There could be. But it is to say that on this one side, at least, where we're talking about the unnatural alteration of living organisms, that could have far-reaching adverse effects on the environment, and everything we're learning so far in genetically modified crops tell us not only could it have, it already is have, and it's and it's probably going to be something much more than we are capable of dealing with. And because of that, there should have been legislation already enacted that at least, you know, to whatever extent we can try to control some of the madness, it would be happening, but it's not happening. And we're racing forward now with genetically modified crops. We're funding transgenic animal human embryos because we think these creatures are going to somehow open the door to a better evolution of the species and a medical salvation for our health. And you started out this program earlier on talking about moth genes now that are being fused with potatoes, pigs that are being given human growth genes, fish that are being implanted with cattle growth genes, tomatoes that are being bred with flounders. And what most people don't realize is that, as far as the food parts of it, the FDA...
Hold on, thought we'll be right back. Go right ahead, pick the story up.
Well, the FDA that is charged with protecting, our concerns as a society. I mean, they allow the producers of these products to do their own testing, and then they accept those reports from those corporations at face value that the biotech creations that they're making are safe. And yet, independent studies, which have been suppressed and have been the subject of lawsuits which have dragged them into courts and tried to exhaust their financial capacity to be able to support the evidence behind what their scientific research has led to, such as Arpad Puste and some of the other people who found that the rats that were eating some of the byproducts of some of these genetically modified crops were developing all kinds of health issues, and that their offspring were also developing health issues. These people have been suppressed. And in the end, I hope, Dr. Monteith, that we don't learn what I call the Brundlefly lesson. You think about that old movie, The Fly, and there was this scientist named Seth Brundle who was conducting these teleportation experiments, and he accidentally has his DNA combined with a common housefly during one of those teleportation experiments. And soon afterward, he becomes the transhumanist dream come true, a superhuman. He's got lightning quick agility. His senses start getting heightened. He starts developing superhuman power. He's got the sexual proclivities of an African lion. But then something else starts happening, something unexpected, and he starts transforming into this hideous monster, and ultimately he's destroyed. Now, Jeff Goldblum, who was the actor who played Seth Brundle in the remake of that film, he also starred in as Ian Malcolm in Jurassic Park, and he was a guy who subscribed to the chaos theory. He certainly was not portrayed as a Christian. He was an evolutionist who subscribed to the chaos theory. And when he's being chased down the road by a giant T-Rex, he wants to know who in the world thought this was a good idea to bring this extinct species back. And the whole point being that if evolution decided to selectively remove these organisms millions of years ago, then maybe there was a reason why. But what I would say to people of faith is, if there was a reason why the Creator, God Almighty, put a barrier between the species and commanded that each of these species would recreate after their own kind, and when these powerful angels, known as the Watchers, rebelled against God, and came down and started trying to mingle their species with the human race.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, Tom, go right ahead.
When these powerful angels came down and tried to mingle their species with the human race, it ultimately and instantly led to the judgment of God, the great fiat of the flood that wiped out everything except for Noah and his offspring, who evidently were the only remaining persons on earth who were pure of that DNA contamination that had happened as a result of what was going on with these watchers and these women, and then over a long period of time, interspecies, just breeding of humans, that DNA had been corrupted. Now, obviously, we don't have time on your show tonight to talk about the background behind that, but the point is that I hope we don't learn that lesson again, that these things have a way of getting out of the box, and when they get out of the box, they can affect the environment of the Earth.
Well, I think we're out of time, Tom. Do you have a website you'd like to get out before we let you go?
Certainly. If anybody wants to find out more, they can go to Raiders. It's just like the football team, R-A-I-D-E-R-S. The full name of the website is RaidersNewsUpdate.com, RaidersNewsUpdate.com, and they can find out more about the new book there, Nephilim Stargate. The other book, The Ahriman Gate, you already have that in possession.
Right.
They can get that directly from you. I want to encourage people to support Dr. Monteith and his radio programs. He's one of the most important voices out there right now, and I hope people know that.
God bless you. Thanks very much, Tom.
God bless you, Dr. Monteith. Thank you for having me on again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, that was Tom Horn. I hope you enjoy him. We always enjoy having Tom with us. Well, of course, this is the time when we need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and so if you'd like to help us, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927, and certainly join the Radio Liberty family if you'd like to, or certainly get our newsletter, or if you'd like, of course, to get a free copy of our newsletter or catalogs. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And as Tom was talking this evening, I was reminded of the opening to The Tale of Two Cities by Charles Dickens. It was the best of times. It was the worst of times. It was the age of reason. It was the age of foolishness. It was the epoch of belief. It was the epoch of incredulity. It was the season of light. It was the season of darkness. It was the spring of hope. It was the winter of despair. We are living in truly historic times. And, of course, if you go back and read what Dickinson wrote, Charles Dickens wrote, when he used the term light and darkness, the L had a capital L. The D had a capital D. Actually, suggesting deity, a deity of light, the deity of darkness, that eternal battle between good and evil. Most people would have read that and never even understood. But that is the battle that is going on today. And, of course, where are the people calling people to repentance, calling for a great revival, calling for people to fear God and understand our job is to fear God and keep His commandments. Our job is to love God and keep His commandments. Our job is to obey God and keep His commandments. And God is going to bring a terrible judgment on this world if there's not another revival, if the people don't turn back to Him. And I don't know what it's going to take, but our job is to reach people and to encourage them. Well, anyway, this is Dr. Stan here. And so we ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival. We ask you to pray for our leaders and pray for our ministers. But please remember to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision, for our protection, because we're on the front lines of this truly spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. And remember our number, it's 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to get a copy of the Ahriman Gate, Tom's material, well, give us a call. It's available through Radio Liberty, and as well as his other books on spiritual warfare, the gods who walk among us. And believe me, they are there. And then, of course, alien intervention. There are alien objects, but they're truly demonic.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.